Celebrating the best of the best with the Big Sports Breakfast Legends.
This is how legends are made.
Our Friday legend joining us from over in the US. He won the Open Championship back in 1991, 30 years ago, at Royal Birkdale in England. 17 professional tournament victories worldwide. He was top 10 at the Masters on three occasions and now a commentator, course designer, a coach. He's also the captain of Australia's Olympic golf team. Ian Baker Finch, morning to you, Ian. How are you?
Good morning, all. How are you today?
We're going very well, thank you. Great to have you on the show. I'm sure it's a nostalgic week for you. What are your memories of walking up the 18th in 1991?
Well, it just certainly doesn't seem like 30 years ago, that's for sure. But the memories are indelibly imprinted in my mind, that the good times, the good day that I had that day, 29, the front nine, and coming home, being able to relax a little up the last to win comfortably. So, yeah, it's great. It's a great week for me. Most times I go over, but this year I didn't because the COVID restrictions are too difficult to get to England and back and then get to Tokyo for the Olympics. So I'm home here watching it on TV and playing some golf with my buddies. And I'm sure I'll have a nice red out of the jug on Sunday night and toast the new champion.
Yeah, so you should. Good morning, Ian. It's Michael Clark here. It's a pleasure and an honour to speak to you, mate. Congratulations on, well, not only an amazing career, but everything you've done for the great game of golf and, yeah, certainly a fan growing up watching. Mate, can I ask where did it start? Where did this love of golf begin for you?
Back on the farm, really, back in the late 60s. I was born in late 1960. My dad and a few other farmers in the area decided to build a golf course up on the Sunshine Coast area of the Glasshouse Mountains, a little course called Biwa. And I used to drive down on the tractor with my dad to build this course with, you know, all the other farmers around, and started to play after that. Got my first set of clubs when I was 12 and played all sports like we all do, and fancied myself as a bit of a fast bowler as a kid. Thought I could do a bit of that. Had the little Dennis Lilly run up and everything. And
you picked the right sport, buddy. Don't worry about that.
I was very, very fortunate because in those days, not many kids played golf, you know, especially in the country. I was the only one, and the only one that took my clubs to school and practiced after school and that sort of stuff. So it was a little different. You know, I was... you know, the other kids obviously playing the other sports. I had lots of mates, you know, in soccer and football and cricket and tennis and whatever, but none of the other kids played golf, so it was a bit strange.
Ian, Laurie Daly here, mate. Always great to have a chat. Can I ask, mate, were you a natural golfer when you first picked up the stick, the club, sorry, or were you more had to work at it?
I think I was natural. Laurie, I was a big fat kid. You know, I was tall and big and bigger than all the other kids. So when you're a kid, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, the bigger kids tend to be the best at whatever they do at that, you know, as a young junior. So I won a lot of stuff as a kid, state schoolboy titles and that sort of stuff. And I think when you're really, really good at something as a kid, you sort of gravitate towards it.
Yeah.
And that's really... Obviously, then I had to really work at it. And when I wanted to be a professional, you have to work your ass off because not many make it. Mm. Like in anything, you guys know all too well, you're legends yourselves. I'm honored to be talking to you guys. It's a tough game because it's a solitude that, you know, you have to kind of get used to that. I preferred the team games and those sports better, but golf, you could kind of get lost in your own little world out on the range for hours and hours and hours by yourself. And that's how I got good at it from the age of 15. I left school at 15 to be a golf pro and worked my butt off and, you know, made it eventually. But it's not all beer and Skittles, as my dad used to say. You know, it's if you want to get ahead, you got to work your ass off. And I did. And all of the guys in my area that played golf well, you know, gave good competition. We had a lot of good kids growing up in Queensland in the Brisbane area when I was young. Greg Norman, one of them, obviously. He was the eldest of all of us. And Wayne Grady, another major winner. Pete Senior, he was the best at every age, you know, when we were kids. So we had some good competition too.
Tell us about your first encounter with the Shark, Greg Norman.
You know, I was doing an apprenticeship to be a golf pro from 1976. You do a three-year apprenticeship like being a carpenter or any tradie. That was the same thing with golf back then. And Greg was 6 years older, and he won a big tournament in Adelaide called the West Lakes Classic as a 21-year-old when I was just turning pro as a 15-year-old. And he was the guy that we all looked up to as the guy we wanted to be. And then he went off to Europe and won on the European Tour and then to America. But all of the kids, we wanted to be Greg. And eventually we got to play with him and against him. And he made it tough on us. It was hard to become friends with Greg. He wanted to be the best. And he was obviously the best at every level and then became best in the world for about a decade. So whenever you got a chance to play with him or beat him on occasion, it was a feather in your cap.
Ian, what about the mental side of golf? I feel like everybody loves the game of golf. There's no doubt about it. But I feel what's underrated in that sport is the discipline you need mentally to be able to pick yourself back up, you know, every 2 minutes, every second shot, it feels like. You know, how do you go through that roller coaster of emotions as a young golfer for the young boys and girls listening, but then also at the highest level? How did you manage to deal with that day after day?
For the youngsters listening that are interested in wanting to become better, understand that golf's really different in that you can't win every day. You only win occasionally. If you had two or three wins a year, you are exceptional. That's one of the hardest things. When you're winning all the time, it's easy to be up and be confident. But when you're not winning, you still have to grind your way around. And grinding it out is, you know what it's like when you don't quite have it one day, but you've got to hang on to your wicket and you've got to just grind it out somehow, how do I get to 10? How do I get to 20? How do I get to 30? How do I get to 50? You know, a great example of that. It's in golf, you just grind it out and hope that one day you get that feeling again, and then the next shot that you hit great sort of gives you a bit more confidence and a bit more. And when you're young and doing well, it's easier. I lost it in my mid to late 30s and lost that confidence and never really regained it and went off and did other things. But as a youngster, you just have to keep getting back up. You know, when you get knocked down, get back up again, grind it out the next day. You never know when you're going to get that feeling. Oh, yeah, that's it. And then the next shot's even better. And the next shot's better again. And you just keep building on that confidence. So I think it's the same in any sport. You get knocked down more often than you're up.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep getting up each time you get knocked down. That's the toughest part because it's a confidence. It's all... At elite level in all sports, it's such a confidence thing. You can be the fittest person on the field and in great form and not win. You know, you've just got to keep coming back and keep showing up, right?
Yeah, you certainly do. Were you one of these people, Ian, that, you know, if you went through a rough trot, you worked extremely hard and just kept going harder and harder the following days? Or did you try and find yourself, I need to get away. I need to go and relax because... You know, there's obviously different ways of doing things, but what sort of process did you go through?
My dad was a hard worker, farmer, Second World War, you know, just a tough old bastard. And he just said, keep working harder than everybody else and you'll get ahead. Yeah. So I worked harder and I hit a lot of balls. And I think all of the guys that I mentioned before were all the same way. We all just grew up on the range. Grew up on the golf course, did our best to teach ourselves how to play the best way we could, hit thousands of balls. You know, the old hit balls till your hands bleed, that sort of old, tale. I played a lot of golf too. I played 40 tournaments a year. These days, most of the guys play 20 to 25 maybe. So I played a lot and that's what we did. You know, the money wasn't that big that you could afford to say, hey, I'm going to have 2 months off and get away from it. You just kept playing.
Ian, a lot's changed in regards to time, generation, era, when you look at golf now, I'm sure, versus when you first started. What's the most dramatic change that you think you've seen in professional golf these days? And do you think golf is in a great place at the moment?
Golf's in a great place. We've had great role models all the way through and they continue to shine. So that's a great thing. The biggest thing is the science of the game, the athleticism, the money. When Tiger came along in 1996, the money doubled. It doubled again in the next TV contract. It doubled again in the next one. So more and more athletes started taking up the game, whereas in 30, 40, 50 years ago, the big money sports took the better athletes. And I think golf now has a lot more athletes playing. It's an athletic game. It's a strength and speed game. And so now I think the players, the depth of field is so much stronger and deeper now than it was because of that. And then the science of the game mixed in with the equipment manufacturers has now got us to a point where I can't imagine equipment getting any better than what it is now, or the science being able to tell us anything more than they're telling us now. And so the young fit athletes are coming through at a younger age, and the guys, when they get to, say, Scotty's age at 40, 41, I think he is today, they're looking at, boy, how am I going to beat these 25-year-olds? Whereas back in the day, the 40-year-olds would be thinking, hey, I've got the experience, I've got the mark on these young fellas, I can still beat them. But it's harder now because they're just younger, fitter, stronger. That, to me, that's the biggest change, the science of the game. You don't have to hit as many balls now, that the computers tell you what's going on. So that's a big part of it.
Yeah, you mentioned Tiger Woods, and certainly got a massive following around the world. And, you know, we know he had that accident recently, and we're all hoping and wanting to see him come back. Do you think he'll come back, and do you think he can ever win another major?
I doubt very much that he'll be able to come back at that level to perform at an extreme level under pressure. Yes, he'll come back. He's such a determined man. He'll figure out a way to get back to playing again. He may just come back and play in the father-son tournament with his son Charlie at the end of each year. He might come back and play a few tour events. I don't see him as ever being a ceremonial golfer. If he comes back, he won't come back just to play. He'll come back to win. And if he can't, he'll go away gracefully and go watch his son play, I would think. He's doing well, I can tell you. He lives in my area, just a couple of miles away. He's doing everything he possibly can in the rehab. So if anyone can do what he can, you know, he's such a just a brilliant athlete and single-minded. But whether or not he'll be able to work hard enough on that leg to play at a level to beat Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and, you know, the John Rahms of the world today, I doubt very much.
Is he the best you've ever seen, Ian?
Yes. Yeah, I'd have to say. I grew up idolising Jack Nicklaus. I still do. He's a friend and a mentor and a great man. But I think Tiger, at his best, had the mark on Jack just because he was the best at every aspect of the game. And then the best mentally, and the fittest and strongest. So he was the best at every single thing. If you had to say, who's the best iron player, or who's the best pitcher, or who's the best putter, you'd pick Tiger in all of the categories. So
amazing.
Yeah, he was remarkable.
Yeah. We're talking to Ian Baker Finch, he's our Friday legend. We have a question from John from Moorbank, one of our listeners on our text line. Ian, can you ask him, who were some of the best characters you played with? The likes of Wayne Grady, Jack Newton, John Daly, Roger Davis, etc. All loved a drink and a good time. I bet you got some great yarns.
Yeah. Hey, it's hard. He mentioned all the names, right? It'd be hard to go past Grades and Newty for a couple of cold ones after a round. They always had a good time. Roger Davis has become a good friend, and we're on the board of the Australian Tour together. We love sharing a glass of red wine together and telling old yarns. There were so many characters in those days. Back in the 70s and 80s, when I was first starting out, Bob Shearer, Stuart Jenn, Brian Jones, all those guys that hang out with Mutey. So many good times, so many good stories. Now you can't get by being that way, though. The kids coming through now are just so good and so fit and strong. And, you know, they probably only drink on Sunday nights. They don't even have one during the week, a lot of them. It wouldn't be fair, actually, the way they are now. But there's we had good times up in Japan, you know, with Marshy and Gailey and Jonesy. We had great times there. Over in Europe, travelling around the world with all of Mike Clayton was another one we travelled with, Wayne Smith from Perth. Yeah, lots of great mates. And we're all still great mates and you know, stay in touch with each other if you know, through good times and bad, which happens as we all get older. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good times, great memories.
Yeah, there's plenty of them. The back end of your career, Ian, has certainly been, you know, well documented. I mean, tell us about that 1997 British Open when Todd Woodbridge was your caddy and just how the pressure had built to that point and the moment of realisation that your ability to contend and compete was over and how you dealt with that.
Yeah, tough times. I stopped playing halfway through 96 at the British Open. I think I shot 78-80 at the British Open at Lytham in 96. I'd had some injuries that I'd been trying to deal with for a couple of years. I'd played terribly. Couldn't find the feeling, you know, when you go out and you try and find whatever it was that you had, that spark, that feel under pressure. Whenever I could shoot 66 on Wednesday, and then I'd shoot 76 on Thursday when the pressure was on, and I just couldn't figure it out. So I went home to Australia, had some injuries seen to, took the 6 months off the game, was coming back to try and practice again and decided not to play in the Open in 97. And I was there and I'd been playing with friends the week before around in Ireland with Gary Edwin and a few mates. And the boys there said, oh, come on, Finchie, you've got to play. You can't miss it. You've played every one for 14 years or something. So I said, come on, Toddy, we'll go see if I can do it. And I was so stiff and sore and nervous that I shot 20 over par, and that was really the catalyst to jump ship and say, okay, enough's enough. I can always come back at a later date if I feel like it. I'm going to go do some work with the commentary. I'd been offered a great job overseas to do what I'm doing now overseas in America. I did all the work back home with Channel 10 and the PGA Tour Productions team back in Australia. I was doing about 10 a year back there. So the jump was hard from 96 through to 97, but that day when I played so poorly at Troon in tough conditions, that was when I said, I've got to step away. I've got to go do something else. You know, the hard part was that everyone thought that that's how I played. I could still go shoot 66 the next day. You know, it wasn't like I couldn't play. I just couldn't play under pressure. And there's a big difference, you guys know. You're still fit and strong and you can do anything that, you know, it's like playing games with anyone that thinks that they can play sport as well as you guys do in your chosen professions. And I was the same way, just I couldn't do it under pressure. And I could go make money and a living and look after my family doing something else. Tough decision at first, but yeah, I made the right decision.
I was about to ask, mate, would you have done anything different? And secondly, what advice would you have for someone like a Ben Simmons? And I know he plays in a different sport, you know, from golf to basketball, but he's having issues at the moment with shooting and three-point throwing. And, you know, he's pulled out of the Olympics to get himself back mentally in the right frame of mind. What advice would you be able to give him, given what you went through?
Just keep doing what you do. You don't lose it. It doesn't go away. It hides at times. You get frustrated. You get nervous. You get down on yourself. Some people get angry. Some people get, I turned inside. You know, I was like, oh, I'm afraid of certain shots. You know, it was a terrible feeling. Keep doing what you do, because if you just keep doing it, just do it 1,000 times a day. It'll come back. You'll get over it. You either accept the failures when it happens and get back on the horse or the bike or whatever that analogy is, and just keep doing it. don't try and fix anything. Do what you do well and keep doing it well, and just keep doing it and focus on what you do well. Do not focus on what you don't do well. Don't focus on the negatives. Focus on the positives. I'd say that to anybody in any sport.
Because I'm assuming, mate, you would have got plenty of advice from a lot of people, and if you listen to a lot of that advice, yeah, you get it screws with you.
Oh, you go nuts. Mm. Stick with your coaches. Stick with your trainer. Work out hard. Do everything you possibly can to be the best you can be at what you do well. Keep doing it. Trust yourself. Trust the people around you. Get good people around you. And don't go searching. Don't go looking at what you can fix. Look at what you do well and perfect that, and it'll come back. And I've seen it over time with the guys that stepped away like myself. I was chasing my tail. I saw 20 different coaches. I lost what I did well in search of what I could do better. And that's what I've learned at my age now, 60. Still play well at the club. You know, if I have 73, it's a bad day. If 69, it's a good day. I still play nicely. But if I look back on it, that's the one thing I would have done. I would have stuck with the same caddy, would have stuck with my same coach, had the same people around me and not changed anything, and just worked on my fitness and on my golf game, and I'm sure I could have got it back. But science of today would have helped me at that time too, being able to see in a computer tell me what was going on, not someone else, you know, giving me their remedy.
Still a fantastic career, 17 victories across the globe, and of course a major champion in the 91 Open. And who wins this one, Ian? We've got Louis Oosthuizen shot a nice 64 overnight. What about the Aussies? It looks like Cam Smith and Lucas Herbert are the ones in contention after round one.
Yeah, any of them can come back. You never know about the weather. If the weather changes one day and they get a bit of a good break on the draw time, you can turn a 65 out of a 75, you know, playing the same way depending on the weather over there. So the course is in great shape. The greens are perfect. It doesn't look like an Open Championship, does it? It looks lush and green like Augusta National. It doesn't look like what we're used to seeing. So I like the guys that have started well. They've got an advantage, Louis and Jordan Spieth. But the Aussie boys, a lot of them are in good form. So I think they can come back. And, you know, 10 under par is going to be a great final score. They can do that. Just get a good break, get out there early before the wind one day and shoot a little 64 and be back in it.
Are you off to Tokyo?
I am, yes. Yep. Back over with the team next week.
Great stuff. And they look well-placed to potentially medal. Who knows?
Yes, I think both the men's and the women's. We've got two good players in each. Hannah Green and Minji Lee for the women, and Cam Smith, Mark Leishman for the men, all in good form. I'm sure we'll medal, and I'd like to say we can medal in both. So, looking forward to it. My job's just to drive the bus, make sure the beers are cold when they get home.
It's an important job.
Most important.
make all the speeches, say all the right things. You know what it's like.
Great stuff. Yeah. Well, Ian, it's been great to talk to you this morning. Congratulations again on what was an amazing career and everything you've done since as well. And good luck. I can't wait to see how they go in Tokyo. Enjoy yourself, stay safe, and thanks again.
No worries at all. Great to be with you. I really appreciate the time. Thanks,
Ian.